I am a huge proponent of no more meetings. Please don't give me another meeting. And then I say, but let's do a stand-up. And it's back to that idea that a good stand-up can erase so many meetings and let people get back to working sessions. The huddle really isn't supposed to just be a return and report. It's supposed to be a connecting ritual that is the rhythm of your organization. It's how you guys connect. It's how you guys communicate.
Welcome to KPI Fireside. Our mission is simple, to improve companies and to improve careers through continuous improvement. In every episode, we explore the spark, the moment, the mindset, or the method that ignites real change. Whether you're just starting out or leveling up, you'll find the insights and inspiration to fuel your next improvement. Welcome back to KPI Fireside, a continuous improvement podcast. Today on the podcast, we are excited to welcome Heather Everton. Heather is a dynamic leader in the world of operational excellence with over 10 years experience driving product and process change inside businesses, large and small. Heather has made a name for herself by turning big ideas into real, measurable outcomes. Heather currently serves as the Vice President of Product at Merrick Bank, where she helps align strategy with execution, using data-driven insights and practical leadership. She's known for her no-nonsense approach to problem-solving, her passion for empowering teams, her ability to bring clarity to complex business challenges. Heather is a wife, a mother of two active boys, and also an investor. Heather, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Keith. Thanks for having me today.
Awesome. It looks like you are enjoying a little bit of the outdoors today.
I do like to hang out on my back deck most summer days. This is where I set up camp.
Awesome. So Heather, tell us a little bit, and maybe even without using a job title, but tell us a little bit about what you do for work.
Yeah, I work in digital products. So I mostly help our teams at the bank with the software solutions they use. So every type of software, I focus on helping them connect the systems that they, their business processes with the actual systems of these digital tools, helping them, you know, get some clarity, move away from really complex processes and simplify.
Wonderful. So we'll just jump right into it. I want to get to connecting some of what you do with why you do it. What do you like most about your job?
Now, one of my favorite things is, As we're working through, we always start with what most people feel like is a really complex problem. And getting to that aha moment where it clicks and it makes sense and it feels simple, the simplicity on the far side of complexity is my favorite thing about my job and my favorite thing to help people accomplish.
Wonderful. And you've had a number of operational, you know, in businesses, operational roles. What kind of industries have you worked with and worked in?
You know, when I first started during college, I was working in a finance company. I started in their call center and was able to kind of work my way up. I ended up helping them launch a payroll card product. And that was kind of my first introduction into product management, building a product for a specific audience, understanding what they need, how they work. And then I had the opportunity to go work for a software company. I was able to kind of wear almost every hat in that company, just try a little bit of everything, learn so much about, again, products and how they work, but this time from more of a technical perspective and really tapping into that software development lifecycle and how products get made from the software side. So that was a good decade of my life, and then kind of swung back into the finance sector, pulling those two pieces together.
And you've worked in small companies and large companies. I'm curious if you could share for us any insights on things that are different in big versus small companies, things that are just different in big or small companies, and then whether you like the differences in one or the other.
You know, that's a good question. One of the thoughts that comes to mind when I think about a small company versus a big company is, and I'm going to butcher this quote, but if you want to go far, go together. If you want to go fast, go alone. kind of that concept. Small companies move a lot faster than big companies. The bigger you get, the slower things go. Fantastic thing with a big company is you can go really far. And once they get to a certain size, you know, they kind of have that never fail mentality. And that's an awesome thing to be a part of. But the pace really does slow down as you grow, and each level that you expand, you're going to see a little bit of that contraction in velocity. The other piece of it, though, is as I've kind of dug into larger organizations and how things work, it's just an amalgamation of small companies, right? Every department, every team, they kind of think about and run themselves as their own little small company. And the more they can do that, the better off things are, because then they can, in their own little pockets, go a lot faster. Not get too weighed down.
That's a very interesting insight. You are someone that takes initiative and likes to see things change and like to see things happen. What have you had to learn or adjust to in working with a big company about change management and working with people? Are there some lessons that you've learned about how to make change happen? You know, in a bigger company versus in a smaller company where you can just do things if you want to do things.
Yeah, the idea of just do it. That was kind of my mantra for a lot of my career. Just try it, see what happens. And I love the flexibility of that. In a larger company, you have to be a little bit more strategic with some things, and especially in finance, obviously there's some regulatory components, things like that you need to be careful of. But for me, still looking for that just do it opportunity. There's so many things that you can just take action on. You don't have to wait around for permission. You know, sometimes this gets me into a little bit of trouble, but I'm definitely a ask forgiveness over ask permission kind of person. And know your compliance, know your laws, know what you can and can't do, but then just go do stuff. Get stuff done and see what happens. You know, as you grow into a larger company, there's still some hurdles with that, and you have to be a little more picky and choosy about which ones you just do, but I don't like to let it slow me down.
That's awesome. That's some great advice. So I know you've been working in the software development world for many years and working with probably hundreds of software implementations and product rollouts and things like that. What have you learned about the agile development process? Let me rephrase this a little bit. Would you consider yourself an expert in agile?
You know, that imposter syndrome runs deep when you start young in your career and move fast. So I don't know that I consider myself an expert in much of anything, but I love the agile development process. I love the concepts that it teaches. And the other aspect of it that I love is you don't have to be an expert in order to have it make a difference. Right. I don't know everything there is to know about agile development or Lean Six Sigma. You know, I've taken classes, I've read books, I've played around with it. But understanding some basics can really take you far. Something as simple as like a daily huddle, right? It's a very simple core function of agile. And some people get so hung up on understanding everything there is to know or every concept there is about agile that they never implement that first step. And for me, any project, any team, any development cycle, it doesn't matter where you're at, you can always implement a daily huddle. It's so simple. Those are the pieces that I really gravitate towards in the agile development cycle. When I see teams try to do an agile initiative in a waterfall format, it kind of breaks my heart because I'm like, guys, just start with the simple things. There are really simple use cases that you can apply. And if somebody were to look at that project, they may not say, oh, that's an agile development lifecycle, or they're really following this method or that method. But if you just take simple action, you can see the impact right away of something as simple as like a huddle.
So for anybody that might be listening that might not be completely familiar with what a daily huddle is, could you just describe for us a daily huddle is? Explain what that is exactly.
Yeah, for me, a daily huddle is like, it's the pulse of a company. It's how you know what is happening. It's a
5-10 minute stand up, usually where people are standing around together. Now that we're in more of a remote work environment, oftentimes they're digital, but it's just a coming together to check in. And the format can be really simple, but what I found is the more standardized that daily huddle is, the more effective it is. So when you show up and there's not a clear agenda and there's not a clear question of what people are trying to answer, it can kind of get off the rails. And a 10-minute stand-up turns into a 30-minute meeting. And the last thing anybody needs is another meeting. But I'm a firm believer that with a 10-minute stand-up, you can nix 10 meetings a day. So for me, it's just that simple. Everybody shows up, they check in, they report what they got done, what they're working on, what they're stuck on. And we can take that and turn it into working sessions instead
of
meetings.
Let's say I was working for you in your organization and I was new, you probably wouldn't hire me if I didn't know what a daily huddle was. But let's pretend for a minute that I didn't know what a daily huddle was and you were asking me to implement one. How would you tell me to do it? Like, what are the questions that I should ask?
You know, my favorite questions are really simple. What did you get done? What are you doing next? Where are you stuck? And you can frame those any different ways. But as long as I know those three basic things and I know that about each area of my project, we can keep things moving forward really quickly. It's fun to throw in some additional questions. What are some quick wins or a little bit of variety, something to keep the energy of a huddle? Because a huddle really isn't supposed to just be a return and report. It's supposed to be a connecting ritual that is the rhythm of your organization. It's how you guys connect. It's how you guys communicate, and it speeds up that feedback loop, but not if it's just a return and report.
I love that word rituals about the purpose of the daily huddle and the idea of connecting with individuals. What are some differences about the way huddles might be ran for an in-person team versus a remote team versus a hybrid team that has some people who are in office and some people who are not in office?
Yeah, what I've seen when it is an all-in-office team, getting people out of their desk and into a common environment is super valuable. Having people just stand next to each other and talk for a minute is fantastic. I'm sure we've all seen the kind of fun memes and things right now going around about people doing plank huddles or things like that to keep the pace up. And that really just taps into the culture of your company. But the connection and that in-person aspect is something you can only get when everyone is all there physically together. When you're missing that, whether it's an all-remote or a hybrid team, I typically see teams have the most success by still just doing it all virtual, because when you have that half and half, having some people all together standing and other people on a digital device, it kind of creates a little bit of separation or distance. So I suggest having one format, have everybody join in that same format. But when you're doing a digital huddle or a virtual huddle, having an agenda of what everybody's going to talk about pre-prepared is super, super valuable. Because again, these are 10-minute stand-ups, not hour-long meetings. And you've got a lot of content to cover in that 10 minutes. So having everybody come prepared, having already written down what they did, what they're doing, where they're blocked, makes a huge, huge difference. And
how many people can you have in a huddle in 10 minutes and not run out of time?
That's a good question. The latest huddle that I was participating in, I think they kept growing and they ended up with like 37 people. And I was like, oh, friends, we're in over our heads here. What I really try to tap into is the work streams. So there's always a little bit of cross-functionality, but being able to connect with the people that are working on what you're working on. The reality is that isn't going to be 37 people that are all pushing the same boulder up the hill. I try to keep my stand-ups to around 10 to 12 people. If you need a couple more here or there, that's all right. Again, we're going for connection, not meetings. So a meeting, you can have a whole bunch of people just listening. A stand-up, every single person there is there to participate. And so it's really important to have the attendees, each person have something to say, something to report, something to contribute. And if people are just listening, they can get a download or a report of what happened in that stand-up. They don't need to be
there. What kind of teams can use stand-ups as a management technique, as a productivity technique? Is this just software development teams?
You know, this is probably where I got most excited about stand-ups. I was working in a software company
And we were doing stand-ups as part of our organization. We had a development team. And so we were doing those stand-ups, and it felt very predictable. I had read Scrum, The Art of Doing Twice the Work in Half the Time, and kind of tapped into the value of it there. But I was working with customers all day, every day. So I wasn't one of the developers at this time. I was customer facing, and I was interacting with businesses from every walk of life. Small little real estate companies with two people, or, you know, large construction companies with 100 employees. And what I saw was the power that this huddle could have far and away outside of just a development team. I think it more started inside manufacturing teams, and it's exciting to see the software development teams kind of pick this up. But my favorite piece has really been seeing it trickle into finance, seeing it work its way through construction, seeing it work in small teams and large, because it's still that same, the same need. You know, we talked at the beginning about large companies versus small companies, but the need is still the same. It's that connection. It's that trust building. It's that ritual and that rhythm of being able to connect and check in and build that trust together.
I think that,
so that's kind of where I got most
excited. I think that's an interesting point about building that trust. I'm thinking about a scenario where, again, in different companies, the divisions between departments sometimes can be, you know, more or less, let's just say, you know, between developers and support or developer and sales, there's always this tension between what the salesperson sold versus what the operations team or the engineering team needs to deliver. And I'm thinking of a time where having people in a huddle that see what other people are doing and what they're working on creates this just awareness, and I would almost say like respect for the fact that, you know, there's stuff happening on those teams over there. So yeah, that's an interesting one. You also mentioned, so you're very familiar with and have worked in software. You mentioned some other industries. I know that this behavior of the daily huddle is a great activity for managing teams and work streams. You talked about manufacturing and the evolution of the Toyota production system and lean inside manufacturing and now into so many other industries. You mentioned healthcare. I know that a lot of folks in healthcare will do like the morning meeting at the huddle board. I know that a lot of construction, I've seen this as a best practice in a lot of construction. And you know, really just in any industry, any team that's working together, it's such a good best practice. So let's talk a minute about Stand Up Alice as a tool to help facilitate huddles. Tell us about Stand Up Alice. What is Stand Up Alice?
So Stand Up Alice is a really fun tool. She's an adorable green robot, which is one of my favorites, but she plugs right into Teams or Slack or wherever you're already doing your communication. And for me, one of the feedback things I sometimes get is, well, I don't like somebody checking up on me or asking me what I'm doing. When it's a cute green robot, you don't feel quite so defensive. But the other hard challenge that people face, whether they're doing an in-person stand-up where everybody's gathered together or a digital stand-up where everyone's on a Zoom meeting, is keeping these short and concise and having that agenda. And so what Stand Up Alice does is it prompts those questions. You know, I started with just those three basics of, what are you doing? What did you get done? Where are you stuck? Alice will gather all those responses, put it in one place, and it does two things. One, people that aren't able to attend or don't need to be in that stand-up, they can see that summary. It creates this log of what everybody's doing, and it creates this agenda for your stand-up. And my expectation isn't that people show up and read that, but that they thought about it before they came to the stand-up. That's where most of the value comes for me, is people having thought through and personally answered those questions, because they're creating that accountability for themselves, and then they're sharing it out with the team. And that just creates visibility so everyone knows what's
I happening. Think that's a great point. And I think that's a useful point in asking somebody a question at the beginning of the day and letting them provide a response, because there's an element of, let's say you're managing a group of people, and even if you know what they're supposed to be doing, asking that question as part of a stand-up or seeing what their response is allows you as their manager to confirm that they also know what they're supposed to be doing or that they have prioritized that thing for the day. So I think that's a really, really interesting point, is it can serve as like a bit of a planning activity for the day, like a chance to realign. That's a great insight.
Yeah, it really is about creating that alignment and creating that momentum. Because the other thing that people sometimes get stuck on is if they show up and they don't know exactly what they're going to do, taking just a minute and really thinking through what did I get done helps me recenter on where I left off. What do I need to do next helps me create that momentum so that I can carry that through the rest of my day. And if I'm stuck, being able to call out that blocker and immediately get help on it, that keeps the momentum going, because that's a lot of what we're trying to do with these stand-ups is just increase that feedback loop so that people aren't moving slowly or waiting a week for feedback or waiting a long time. It lets us just keep the momentum going.
Are there some things that go wrong with huddles? Like, what it sounds like such a great thing. What are some reasons why people might not do it or might fall away from doing it? What are some of the things that people do wrong with huddle to maybe feel like it's not valuable time spent?
Yeah. When huddles go too long, that can kill the momentum, because then it turns into another meeting. And the last thing anybody needs is another meeting. And it's kind of funny for people when I am a huge proponent of no more meetings, please don't give me another meeting. And then I say, but let's do a stand-up. And it's back to that idea that a good stand-up can erase so many meetings and let people get back to working sessions. And so I try really hard with my team to help them separate those pieces of a stand-up, a working session, or a meeting. But letting them go too long, not having an agenda, not knowing what questions are we answering, that's part of why they end up running super long. And then not having consistency. If people show up and they don't know what rapid fire question they're going to get asked about their job or their work or which piece of their, you know, their contribution is going to get called out that day, that it creates a lot of anxiety for people. They don't want to participate. But when you can create this routine, you create this ritual, they know exactly what to expect. And you can still create the fun, engaging aspect of it so it doesn't get too boring, but they need to know what to expect.
So if, let's see, along the lines of some things that go wrong with huddles right now, I'm thinking of some scenarios like maybe I'm stuck in the car and I haven't made it to the office yet and the huddle's starting, or somebody's trying to dial in and their connection's bad. Somebody's not prepared with their answer. Those are all things that can, you know, go wrong with a typical huddle. What are some ways that Stand Up Alice can help alleviate some of those problems?
Yeah, a couple of things with it is, one, you can tailor when you're going to get prompted. So different people need to have that question asked to them at different times of their workday, and it can be tailored to the individual, to their work stream. I also work across teams, right? People across seas, people on the other side of the country. And so being able to tailor when people are receiving that prompt or that question is really valuable, because what we're trying to do is create this intrinsic habit in them to help them have that introspection and then share it and create that visibility and trust with their team. It isn't a micromanaging approach, and using Stand Up Alice to really standardize that and customize it for each team member is super helpful. The other aspect of, you know, people on the phone, driving in, calling in, like I said, I work with teams overseas, East Coast and Utah time, or even California time. I am often stretching their workday a little bit on both ends. Having Alice where if they aren't able to join a 7 a.m. stand-up call, because that's 6 a.m. in California, that doesn't work with their work schedule, they can still participate. They can see what everybody else contributed, and they can add their own contribution. And even if they're just trying to dial in, but you know they're on the road, having that already captured so that you're not getting the distraction in the meeting of, can you hear me? I'm almost to the office. I'll be there in a minute. Hey, my stand-up's in Alice. You can read it there.
Seen times where, because Stand Up Alice captures those responses, somebody who's intending to be at huddle, but maybe they have a bad connection or their audio is bad. We've all been on these calls where the audio is bad or somebody's connection's bad and you just can't hear it. But having that written record is so nice, because then somebody else can just jump in and either read it, share that information. So that's definitely a great benefit of using that. I mean, it's so hard to schedule people for a meeting. I know with a lot of the huddles that I'm a part of, there's always, you know, let's say you got 10 people scheduled for a huddle. There's always going to be one or two people that are either dropping their kids off at school, dealing with an emergency, somebody has a headache, somebody's, you know, the dog did something. Like, there's always going to be a crisis out of any 10 people to have somebody not be able to be attentive to the meeting. So that's a great example. What would you say to, let's say, a scrum master whose job it is to help facilitate these huddles? Should they be nervous of implementing Stand Up Alice in their huddle? Is that going to make their job go away?
No, Stand Up Alice. Alice is fantastic. She's not a scrum master by any means. If you want to do your job well, if you want to be recognized as this scrum master out of all of the people on our team in our company, they can run an effective stand up and be relied on to do more of that. Those are the scrum masters that should implement Alice, because Stand Up Alice isn't going to take away their job. It's going to make them more effective at their job. It's going to create the documentation for them. It's going to create the agenda for them. It's going to let them, as a scrum master, lead a really effective stand up. And they can implement it into any of their scrum rituals, right? They can have a Stand Up Alice bot incorporated into their retro, into their planning sessions, any of those type of things. You tweak the questions a little bit, but you still have that same routine. And that's what we're really trying to help people get comfortable with. And then you have the documentation, which is so powerful and so much work for a scrum
master. I think that with remote work, people have a lot less connection. And so having this opportunity, this moment each day to have a little bit of connection with people, I think it is important for just like the mental health of people working. I think that generally people want to be acknowledged for the good work that they've done. You know, like when you're doing something and it feels like it's adding value, that you're contributing, there's like a little mini celebration. What do you think about the psychological benefit to people who are participating in that stand-up?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely what you just talked about of creating that connection, the human connection, person to person, is so valuable. Being able to have those conversations, being able to share and see what other people are doing, share what you're doing, it does strengthen those relationships. But the other piece of it is, for me, stand-ups are all about building trust. And building trust relies on me doing what I say I will do. In order for me to build trust faster with the people that I work with, I have to do that more often. And daily stand-ups allow me to say what I'm going to do and then do it every single day. And coming into a new team was really kind of scary for me, because I had worked with one team and built a team for a decade. And then I was kind of starting fresh and nobody knew me. They didn't know if they could trust me. They didn't know if I would do what I said I would do. And being able to implement these stand-ups and build that trust quickly was so important for me. I didn't have a decade to wait around for people to trust me again. I needed them to trust me right now. And this was such a powerful tool to just build that connection, build that trust. And that's part of that psychological safety for people. When they trust each other, that builds that connection.
How is it important to have the huddle responses to be written, or just verbally sharing them, is that enough?
You know, I have participated in kind of running the gamut, starting with just a verbal huddle. It is valuable to have that connection, but there's no accountability, even to yourself. And that personal accountability of, what did I say was happening? What did I say was important? And being able to reflect back on that. For me, I go from meeting to meeting so fast all day that not having that written down and being able to reflect back on it is really important. Then sometimes you move into a frame where the scrum master or a project manager or somebody is trying frantically to take notes. So everyone's reporting what they're doing and you have somebody trying to capture it all, right? Because they do see that need and that value of that written record. And it is nice to have the record, but it isn't my record. It isn't what I said. It's what somebody heard me say, but it isn't my own words. And me being able to report to myself and share with the team in my own words exactly what I said I would do, exactly what I got done, exactly where I'm stuck, is so valuable, because there's no miscommunication, and it allows every participant in the huddle to show up one on even ground. So you don't have a facilitator that's trying to do everything, or you have a note taker that's there trying to capture everything. Everyone gets to show up and be fully present. And that's a lot of what we're trying to do. We're trying to build this connection. We're trying to build this trust. And if you have some people that are kind of checked out frantically writing notes, you kind of lose that. So I love that practice of having each individual capture what they are going to contribute in writing and then share and discuss. They don't need to read it, but writing it down first makes their conversation
a lot more effective. The thought that comes to mind for me as you say that is it's like the benefit of writing in a journal, right? You know, if you've ever, for anybody that writes in a journal, there's something cathartic, there's something like good for the soul when it comes to like writing things down versus just thinking about them or even just talking about them. Writing stuff down has a different kind of tactile benefit. And I've got to think that, you know, fingers on the keys and typing in like what I did yesterday and what I'm doing tomorrow, there's probably some sort of, you know, psychological, mental benefit for me. Even if I was just writing in my journal what I'm doing, that's going to have benefit for me. And it's going to allow me to like basically celebrate my accomplishments that I've had for the day. And I love the term that you use in building trust and making and keeping commitments, because we all want to feel like we can trust ourselves, you know, the things that we say that we can do. And so you have this like little written record. That's a great thing as well. This episode is brought to you by KPI Fire, the all-in-one platform for continuous improvement. With KPI Fire, you can align strategy, drive execution, and engage your people. So whether you're leading a team or driving enterprise-wide change, KPI Fire helps you deliver real results. Learn more at www.kpifire.com. And you've got to focus in on the business. There's a lot of times like a little water cooler chat. Using a tool like Stand Up Alice gives you an opportunity to add additional questions in. You mentioned the three questions. Are there any other questions that you've seen used or that you like to use to add into the mix there?
Yeah, sometimes just for a little bit of variety. You don't have to do it every day. You can have a couple of questions that you can cycle through to create that variety, keep people engaged in coming to the Stand Up. Because like we said, we want there to be that predictability so people know what to expect. But we want there to be enough novelty that it's fun and it's engaging. The other aspect of this is for teams that do work remote, this can be one of those most connective meetings for them, where some meetings they sit and camera off, mic off, say nothing, do nothing, just listen for the whole meeting. This is a meeting that every single participant is equally contributing to. And so having those questions as just to get to know you point, touch point is really valuable. The other question that I always really love is like, what's your favorite win today or your top three for the week? Part of what we want to tap into is that celebratory. Sometimes people feel like there's a dichotomy between accountability and celebration. And I really think that the huddle is a great place to tie those two together because you are creating that personal accountability for yourself. But if you can tie in, what are the wins? What are the successes? It can kind of balance out that blocker piece because the blockers are so critical to raise, but sometimes feel a little bit negative. If you can throw in a question about your wins or your successes, that creates that momentum for the team to feel excited. And
yeah, I've seen
engaged.
A few questions that I've seen used and we've used internally. One of them, something simple on a Monday, just what did you do over the weekend? Which, you know, it's really interesting to see what people are up to and, you know, what, depending on the type of culture that you have, people will be more or less open. But if you are somebody who's trying to build a culture, a connectedness with people who aren't in the office face to face, shedding a little, opening the door to let people share, what did you do this weekend is kind of an interesting thing. Another question that I saw that was a great one was, what work are you most proud of recently? That was a fun question. One of my favorite questions is about the daily number. All right. Have you used a question like that at all?
Yeah, being able to tap into your metrics or your individual contribution to a metric is really valuable. Just today on one of my calls, I work for a little bit larger organization now, and they have more formality around metrics and performance reviews and things like that. And while we were in our huddle, everybody got an email saying, thanks so much for your participation in the mid-year reviews. And some people were like, that's funny. I didn't really participate in that. But having the huddle being a place where you can connect and celebrate and share those wins, those successes is for me a lot more valuable than just having this other random process outside and tying that back to a metric. Because the other challenge that people have with performance reviews or kind of this culture on goal setting is, well, I don't know what matters. And if they can show up every single day with a number that matters, they know where they're impacting the company, where they're impacting the project, where where their time is being contributed to. And so for me, having each person own a number that reflects their tie back to the larger effort creates that connection between what am I doing all day and why am I doing it? Because people that don't know why what they do matters, it's really hard to have retention. It's hard to have engagement. And you end up with one of two use cases. And sometimes it's hard to tell which is worse. You have a ton of turnover or you have none at all. And you've got a bunch of people there that don't know why they're there, don't know what they're contributing, and are still just showing up. And both of those will sink your company. But if you can tap into a number where they know what they have to do to impact that number, it can kind of tie that together for them, make sure they know where
to focus. So for folks that are familiar with Agile and the daily stand-up, there's another ritual known as the retrospective. And the idea in Agile is that the retrospective is this thing that you do periodically to look back on the prior period's work and figure out what you did right, figure out what you did wrong. Can I assume that we could use Stand Up Alice to capture insights for a retrospective as well?
Yeah, absolutely. If you've ever ran a retro, especially with a team that isn't super comfortable or familiar with them, you can hear crickets. It feels like it is one of the most awkward, uncomfortable meetings because nobody wants to show up and point fingers, right? Or everybody wants to show up and point fingers. Neither of those is good, and neither of those is the point of a retro. But if instead you can have the team show up and really talk about where they are, where they made a difference, what they would do different next time. If you can have the team show up and talk about what they would do different and give them a chance to really think about it with a tool like Stand Up Alice, then you can show up and have a real conversation. And it's twofold. One, everybody has paused and thought introspectively first about what they can contribute to that retro. And two, you can take all of that feedback and information and organize a meeting around it before you end up blindsided in the meeting without
One of the principles of continuous improvement, which Agile is a methodology designed to evoke continuous improvement, is this concept that ideas for improvement need to be shared by the participants, by the people responsible for running it. And I think that that's one of the key ideas of the retrospective. And by giving somebody a prompt, a question to answer, it's not like, hey, does anybody have any ideas for improvement? And then it's just crickets. But it's like, hey, we're going to have a meeting. We want everybody to share at least one idea for some sort of a process improvement that could be made. Like, what could we do different? What did we learn? Let me ask you this. What are some things that leaders or facilitators of these meetings need to be aware of or need to watch out for in terms of like helping avoid dysfunctional or disrespectful behavior in these huddles?
That's a great question. There's a tricky balance between saying, hey, I'm blocked by something, and the specific individual that you need to help you, and that finger pointing that I mentioned a few minutes ago. A formalized huddle with a predictable expectation of how you're going to answer those questions is really valuable. So I love a tool like Stand Up Alice because it takes some of that emotion out of it and lets a tool speak for itself of here's where we're stuck, here's what I need. The other aspect of it is building that trust. You know, we talked about how this is a connective meeting. It's meant to bring people together. When you trust somebody and you trust your team and you're meeting with them every day, that defensiveness and the disrespect that comes up in some of those meetings tends to disperse. And the more trust you build, the less disrespect you're going to have there. And then the third aspect of it is using this tool, using this meeting as a chance to teach assertive, respectful communication. Because people come into a business, into work, and they have no idea what appropriate, respectful communication really looks like. Some people have a definition of it where they're essentially a doormat and they're disrespecting themselves, they're disrespecting the team, they're disrespecting the company by not saying what needs to be said. Other people come in with respect as a bulldozer and think they can drive everything by taking charge of the meeting. And by modeling this every single day and bringing the same group of people back together to practice this assertive, respectful communication, it works a lot better than just teaching the concept, having them practice it together every single day in a safe environment.
I think that's so interesting. I think that I'll reiterate what you're saying, that as a leader or facilitator, somebody who's helping teach the members of a team, a scrum team, a work cell, like how to work together, what's normal, what's accepted behavior. The use of that blocker question is one of those that sometimes takes a little bit of massaging, I guess you might say. Like I've had situations where after the meeting where somebody said they don't have any blockers, they'll say, "Hey, can I catch you for a few minutes after the meeting?" That's why I love those when you have the huddle and somebody's like, you know, you have the stand up and somebody's got no blockers, nobody's got any blockers. And then afterwards you get a couple of messages like, "Hey, can we chat real quick? Can we chat real quick?" And somebody will say, "Hey, I need this from you. I need that." I'm like, "Hey, that's a blocker and you're welcome to put that in." I call this a best practice, I suppose, but I try to be overstated in allowing people on my teams to mention me or things that they're waiting on from me as a blocker. Like if I'm your blocker, list it in your huddle every day until it's done, because I probably just forgot. I don't intentionally slow you down. But I do think that there's an important job of a leader to be done to help people get the use of that question right. That's a good one.
Yeah, it's a tricky question, but where you're leading from that place of example and encouraging them to communicate with you respectfully about blockers on your side, it also builds that culture where, hey, if I can bring it up to my leader, to my boss, I can bring it up to anybody. And I also can have other people bring blockers up on my side without feeling attacked, because that's just how we do things around here. That's the culture of getting things done, of making a difference.
So with a tool like Stand Up Alice, what would you say to somebody who says, "Well, that sounds like micromanagement. I don't want people to have to answer every day what they're doing."
Yeah, I am a strong proponent against micromanagement. I have to have autonomy in my job. That's something that has driven me from every position I've taken, every company I've worked with. And the powerful thing about daily stand-ups and about a tool like Stand Up Alice is it builds that autonomy. It builds the ability for you to trust yourself, for you to trust your team, and for others to trust you. So having a daily stand-up isn't about micromanaging and enforcing what other people are doing. It's about alignment. And when you have alignment, you have a lot more autonomy. Implementing a tool to help you communicate what you're doing, why you're doing it, and making sure that you're aligned with people on what the priorities are isn't a version of micromanagement. It just allows everyone to do their best work in their own lane.
I think that's a great point. Yeah, it's really more a tool of empowerment and I would say healthy and constructive accountability and not micromanagement. It's kind of funny though, because when I think about like a boss coming over my shoulder every day and saying, "What did you do yesterday?" it feels very micromanage-ish. But when Stand Up Alice does it for me, never bothers me. I've never been offended by Alice saying, "Hey, what did you do yesterday?" or "It's time to submit your report." I'm just like, yep, it is. It's kind of like, you know, as much as you might hate the alarm going off in the morning, sometimes it's like, you know, it's not offensive necessarily.
Yep. I think part of it is that routine. It's that expected response of, "I know I'm going to be asked this question," but it allows each person hopefully to show up excited to share what they got done, what they're working on. And it prevents having somebody work in a silo for a long period of time and end up on totally the wrong path.
That's so good.
So,
well, Heather, we'll just wrap up with a little section I like to call the rapid fire. These are just a few short questions. You can just give them one word or one short sentence type answers. The most important job of a leader is to blank.
Create clarity, vision, priority, create clarity.
Is there a book that you're currently reading or that you recommend, maybe one from your short list?
You know, this is a classic, but it's always my first recommendation is Scrum, the art of doing twice the work in half the time. I love the concept of it, but I also love the narrative form of just being able to tell a story. And it helped me apply the lessons of Scrum across so many different
business practices instead of just.
Do you have a favorite question, maybe a few favorite questions, questions that you find yourself asking a lot in your job as you're in your role?
Probably one of the most common questions, or one of my favorite questions that I kind of keep driving back to and pushing on as a product manager is, what is the problem we're really solving? Especially in financial services, things get really complex really quickly. And sometimes people push back on the idea that this is even solvable because of compliance or regulatory demands. But getting down to the specifics of what is the problem we're trying to solve helps us create that alignment.
Do you have a favorite go-to problem-solving tool that you rely on?
Probably my favorite is just it's very simple, but it's the effort impact matrix. I love the visibility of being able to see where should I invest my time. What problems should I solve next? Because there's always millions of problems and there's millions of ideas. But having an idea funnel capture the effort and the impact of each idea or each problem that you're trying to solve helps me know that the contributions Excellent. That I'm working on matter.
This is another finish the sentence. Continuous improvement is blank.
Continuous improvement is the discipline.
Love it. That's a great one. Heather, thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast. It's been super great to have a conversation with you. And thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your wisdom about daily management and stand-ups and just leadership in general. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
This concludes this episode of KPI Fireside, a continuous improvement podcast. If you have enjoyed today's episode, be sure to add a comment, like, follow, or subscribe, depending on the social channel. Share it with your friends or colleagues who are as passionate about continuous improvement as you are. You can find us wherever you get your podcast. And until next time, keep driving progress and sparking change.